City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 174. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick, and we are here at Steppenwolf.
We're at the Steppenwolf Theater, yeah. Having just come out of a fabulous night with David Sedaris.
Yeah. No, you've heard him before, obviously.
I've never heard him live.
But you've heard him.
Yeah.
It seemed like his voice was tinier.
He sounded like his voice was tinier.
Yeah, like when I've heard him on NPR, it seemed like he had a bigger voice.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just sort of the trickery of the microphone and all
Oh, I'm sure.
Stuff.
As we know.
Yeah.
We sound fabulous.
You know.
Peter sounds so butch.
In stereo, really funny sound.
He's really so Nelly.
Yes, girl. That's straight. That's without effects.
No, but it's really amazing the part of the Traffic series for Steppenwolf is they bring in all these artists, you know, and Sedaris gets sold out so quickly.
Split.
We were right front and center. Mm-hmm. And interesting that he is on tour, I guess, right now, trying out short stories for his new book.
It almost reminds me of like workshopping stuff. Like,
it is.
That's really what he does. He tests his stuff in front of a live studio audience.
Yes.
Which is so interesting. I never quite knew that was his process. I never knew that was a part of his art. And he mentioned just as we were, he opened the floor up to questions at the end, and an audience member asked, so how did you get started writing? And he told this wonderful story about how someone said, well, you know, you're funny, you should keep doing it. It came from an art class.
Right.
He was doing like art.
A bad
critique.
Artist at the Art Institute.
Yeah. So it was just, I never knew the genesis of that. And I'm not going to spoil that because I'm sure he'll tell the story some other time.
I'm sure he will. But he told a hilarious story of Helen, which I hope makes the book. Crotchety old New York woman. Can't you just picture her?
I can. I still can. And I, you know, he was talking about New York apartments and how they're tight in the building and everything. And the tile walls. When I was last in New York, we went by a bunch of buildings and we were in the lobby and I was like, there's like floor to ceiling tile.
Yeah.
It's like being stuck in a bathroom forever. I couldn't live
like
in a bathroom.
Like a bathhouse.
Yeah. Well, no, it's usually not really tile on the wall. Well, not in
you
the
know,
States.
Have you ever been like to Chicago and you go to like Spring where it's the whole Turkish bath restaurant and you feel like you're in the he had a
bizarre
phrase where he said something about that it felt like you were at the bottom of a swimming pool.
Right.
And I instantly like went to Spring. For those who haven't been to Chicago, it's a fabulous restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
A lot of good fish, so the lesbians all love it.
not that kind of fish.
No, but you know, he just stopped smoking, and he didn't read any of his stopping smoking material. But I would really love to hear his take on that because I have a feeling it will have so much kind of bitter, pining, self-pity.
Desires and,
But he was in your fair country. He was in Japan.
He was.
It's
not my country.
It is your country. I can't think of Japan without
but
you, though.
It's funny, yeah. It's
You're
funny
my
that
Japanese
he mentioned,
connection.
And it's interesting that he mentioned he studied Japanese for a month, and the Pimsleur method, of course, which is a brilliant way to learn any new language. I highly recommend it. It's all through, you learn conversational. You don't learn A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Mm-hmm.
You learn, how are you doing today? It is nice to see you. What are we going to do? Yeah, use the toilet, please. You know, all those things. So it's funny. But he spoke about having an audience member asked him about writing in other languages.
Mm.
And it's so true. It's so true how you have, you know, I'm a writer. This is nowhere on par with him. Not at all. But being a writer and then being asked to write in Japanese, which was a big part of my first year with Japanese, and really trying to communicate as much as you could through the written word is so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Because you don't have all of the faculty for the
Correct.
Language that you want
adjectives.
To have.
You really don't find adjectives until, you know, well into your career. Well into your career with a foreign language. But it was just, it was interesting because as he was talking about it, I kept thinking about, oh God, I remember that. I remember having to write sentences and then having to write an essay and, you know, big words. And it's funny he said like elevator and stuff like and movies because those are like a couple of the first words you learn
is
sort
it?
Of yeah like you, especially in the foreign language, you learn the common things, and you have to read signs, right? Yeah. So you have to learn what where is the elevator and where is the movie theater, yeah. and you know what that all means. So,
what I love about him is like he's kind of this really, you know, he's this truly open and out queer
yeah.
author, and yet his writing is not really his sexuality is just an adjective or a bit of a flavor. I mean, obviously
it's just a part of the whole.
It's just
right?
a part of the whole. It's like not really what he chooses to write about, but
yeah, it's never agenda driven.
But the audience was really diverse
in age as well,
in
especially
age and just ethnicity and.
I don't know. I think I have to disagree with you there in ethnicity. There really was a very white audience, but.
Well, it was a pretty wide audience, yeah. but that's kind of.
But it was definitely given. Across the board in what I would call sort of a good broad stroke of Chicagoland.
Yeah, and I didn't realize, I guess, how much time he spent here.
Yeah.
And then he lived here and went to school here.
He sounds like a Chicago. Does he sound like a Chicagoan to you? Because he sounds like a Chicagoan to me.
Well, you know, they're from North Carolina, so.
But I think it was from the Art Institute. He picked it up. Because when he says Chicago, he's got the right CA.
Yeah, which
he's
I don't have.
No. but that to me, that's the clincher. So in whatever capacity. But I mean, if he was at the university here.
Right.
And he picked all that up. But yeah, that's the. He sounds like he's a Midwestern. He doesn't sound like he's from North Carolina.
Yeah, no, it's.
But when he turns the Southern on, you can hear it.
You can hear it.
And he's got the vowels right.
Amy is Southern. Oh, yeah. You know, it's one of the things I love about her kind of pinched, humored twang. Mm-hmm. That's very, very funny. It's very funny, too, that I love that people asked about him writing about his family because, you know, when you have a podcast, you have a radio show, you have a blog. I mean, you know, he was kind of doing almost a written and oral on the radio blog.
Sure.
I mean, in a weird way.
He's living his life in a weird public way. I mean, he was definitely sharing a lot about his life. And let's face it, those are some of the best pieces that I think he's ever written is about, you know, what his interaction with his family and his early childhood, or not early childhood, but growing
up
and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, the fuck up of North Carolina and that family and the crazy, crazy, crazy antics. But you know, it's interesting because it's something that once I started talking that was recorded or being sent over the airwaves, you know, you're really aware that, like, I am introducing these people and what do I choose to say? And usually you don't tell, like, these not honorable stories, but, I mean, you usually just choose to tell these anecdotal moments and what are the anecdotes that stick out to you? And he was talking about this character that he had written this whole story on, which was the major piece that he read tonight, this Helen woman. And, you know, he told after he finished the story, he goes, there's some of these other things that she did, which were god awful. You know, and he's like, but you know, I don't want people to lose sympathy for her or whatever, which was just
to turn on her.
And I mean, you could have turned on her in the first anecdote out of, you know, 100 that were in the story. But it is. It's just an I don't know. Somewhere in the night tonight, I thought, wow, he's kind of been doing the blogosphere podcasting thing in his own way.
Well,
through radio,
right.
AM, FM radio,
sure,
and these readings that now everybody's getting to do because it's kind of like I'm talking about me through my voice. Mm-hmm.
But
I'm a writer. I mean, his is more chosen, of course. His is more, I mean, as he said, he writes 6 and 7, 8 drafts before he even shows it to his editor. So, I mean, he's really combing over every word.
But that's the hallmark of an essayist, right? An essayist has something to say and knows how to say it.
Right.
And remember we talked a long time ago when I was talking about the blogs that I read and the things that I look for. It's smart content.
Mm-hmm.
And the essayists of the blogosphere and the essayists of the podcasting world and the essayists that have something to say, I think are the people with interesting content that they really have. So I think he's because he's been doing it for so long, but I think the blogosphere is now finding these essayists and they're rising. You know, the cream does rise. People who are good at it definitely do it. But that's a way of me quantifying like what I was talking about. This is many shows ago. I think it was like on show 60 or show 70 something. But
it was a lifetime ago.
I talked about smart content. And as, you know, a good essayist, you can instantly recognize. You can instantly hear. You instantly click with for whatever reason. And they can be talking about the most mundane things.
Right.
I'm sure he could spend half an hour telling us about taking out the garbage one day and we would fall over our side splitting laughter and things like that. That's his gift as an essayist. Because the question I wanted to ask him, but I kind of didn't want to ask him in that big crowd because I would love to interview him, but was why the form of essay. I've been trying to find that answer about Hannah, and I probably should have asked, but I don't think it seemed really technical to me.
He indicated that he's moving toward fiction and really enjoying that for the first time, because he doesn't know the story and he doesn't know what parts he's trying to keep or leave out or make sure he says, but he's being able to just deal in a world of invention and purely invention.
Well, look out, Harry Potter. Here
that's
he comes.
Exactly right. Hey, speaking of gay writers, there's a new play in town,
which is
a part of our show by openly gay playwright Douglas Carter Beam. About Face Theater is presenting the Chicago premiere of the big hit Tony Award-winning show from Broadway, The Little Dog Laughed. I don't know why it's got that title. I have not read the play yet, even though I sat down and talked yet with...
Well, it's got it. Well, see, I've seen it. I think this is the first time I've
say,
seen something
you,
that you haven't.
You saw the show last night. I'm seeing it tomorrow night, so as soon as this podcast airs, I will have seen it, so I'll be able to tell people...
Well, the cup ran away with the spoon, and I'll just say that.
The cup
and
ran away
with
the spoon? There you go.
So we'll just leave it at that. That's a clue to what goes on in the title.
But you had a whole lot of fun.
I did, directed by Eric Rosen,
yes,
who is just wonderful. He was so warm, and he was there. And he actually opened the show. He did a little pre-show announcement. We saw the first preview, and it's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating story for what it is, and the...
it's basically about a closeted up, I mean, really,
really
up and coming.
Yeah, actor.
Actor. Of course, people have said Tom Cruise, but it wouldn't be Tom Cruise because he's already arrived.
Right.
But it could have been Tom Cruise, possibly. Well, I don't know. He kind
of
arrived so quickly
he
so quickly rose with Risky Business. But had he not had something quite maybe that magnificently huge.
Right.
The rise of that kind of a mega star who happens to be gay.
Right, exactly.
Or whatever.
Something.
Has a boy.
Yeah. But it's one of those plays where there's four characters. There's two men, two women, two sort of older, meaning older, so like more mature, and then two younger characters. And so there's four people really just laying out this 2.5 hour, two hour 15 minute play. There's an intermission, so there's a wonderful break in there, and the break is so apropos. And the fourth wall is constantly broken in the entire show.
Oh yeah, because there are these monologues. Speaking of essaying,
right,
and now
exactly.
Monologuing.
They're basically monologuing with you in just these wonderful indirect ways. But this show is just it's one of those fancies of theater where here everybody's revolving, everybody has an agenda. The agendas basically all come down to the same thing. But it's just good theater. It felt good. And it's freaking hysterical.
Yeah.
It's
funny writer.
It's so funny on so many levels. And there's even some very, very recent, very, very recent interjections of sort of culture in there.
Yeah.
So there's some great jokes at the behalf of, you know.
Yeah, because it's very modern day.
Stars.
And he very much pokes fun. And later on, keep listening to this Queercast, because you're going to hear a little bit of an excerpt of a scene from the show. And then an interview with Lee Coco, who is very cute, who plays the lead, the up-and-coming actor.
Who ends up in his underwear many times in the show.
Yummy. And the very fabulous Mary Beth Fisher, who is a phenomenal actress around Chicago.
Best monologues I've seen.
Yeah, she plays this just cutthroat agent who's his agent and really kind of lives by this her own code of what makes Hollywood work and what she's had to scrap and struggle for. And and this was the part that I think she won the Tony Award for.
Yeah, that's the Tony. She got the Tony for it.
One of the awards. But the other thing Douglas Carter Beam is known for, Xanadu, the musical, and which is on Broadway right now, and he wrote the book for that, and many other very fun and lively and...
Oh, my God, I just have to interject this. I should have talked about it before we started talking about this play, but I have to tell you right now.
Okay.
Guess what they're going to put on television.
What?
Guess what he's working on.
Douglas Carter Beam?
No, Del Shore's
Sorted Lives
on television, like a miniseries.
I've heard this.
I am so excited.
Somebody's in it that I just read about. Who is in it?
Little Leslie? He's gonna make some cameos.
No. There's some person that I heard was just gonna be in it. Oh, for frick's sake. I can't remember. It was somebody's gay thing I was just reading and they said doing
it just came
sort
up
of
on
lines.
My gay news feed today.
Yeah,
I just read it.
We'll
I'm sure it mentioned some people, but
yeah, I can't remember who it is, but somebody I know or I know of is going to be in it. But yeah, but I think the whole tie too with tonight is that somebody asked David Sedaris about his sister Amy, and And his sister, just talking about he and his sister writing plays together, and he said, you know, basically we would just let the act, we would write a script and then we'd throw the script out and we'd let the actors improv and then we'd kind of try to sketch down, write down what they had said. And he said, you know, what the playwright Douglas Carter Bean says when you hear Amy Sedaris say one of your lines, it's what a coincidence.
Right.
what do you call Amy Sedaris saying one of your lines? A coincidence.
Right, a coincidence.
So I thought that was really funny, knowing that we were in watching Sedaris and waiting to come out and do an interview on Douglas Carter Bean. It's a very small world with the queer. With the queer writers.
Intimate world. Let's say intimate. Let's not intimate. Say small. Let's say intimate.
No, we don't want the men's to think that they're small. They're potent. No. They're it's potent.
It's a very intimate, intimate world.
So we've got that in the news and Culture Club coming up, because you've got a lot of good theater that you can
Absolutely.
Go see right now. Actually, we're at Steppenwolf and playing on the main stage, Good Boys and True. Fantastic, fantastic play. And if you miss Sedaris, there's more of the Traffic series coming up throughout the winter and spring. So, and then stay tuned, because you're going to hear a little bit of Little Dog Laugh. It'll be just an enticer to get you into the theater at About Face. We'll be back.
From the producer of Les Miserables and The Phantom of the Opera comes a glorious new production of one of Broadway's greatest musicals, Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. Direct from London, critics have hailed this dazzling new production as magnificent, lavish, and delightfully entertaining. A standing ovation.
How wouldn't it be lovely?
The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette raves, hilarious, a joyous romp. My Fair Lady features one of Broadway's most celebrated scores, including I Could Have Danced All Night, The Rain in Spain, and Get Me to the Church on Time. Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady.
Coming to the Cadillac Palace Theatre January 22nd through February 3rd. For tickets, call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Cast album on First Night Records.
Get me to the church on time.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweed.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 14th, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
About Face Theater presents The Little Dog Laughed, a fast-paced, hilarious look at the world of celebrity by Douglas Carter Bean, directed by Eric Rosen. A hot Hollywood actor is about to win the role of a lifetime, but can he keep his sexuality under wraps? It's playing now through February 17th at the Hoover Levin Theater at the Center on Halsted, 3656 North Halsted. Visit AboutFaceTheater.com.
Court Theater, artistic director Charles Newell adapts and directs Titus Andronicus, Shakespeare's riveting tale of jealousy and revenge. Relish this new adaptation as a modern saga of privilege and entitlement brimming with aggression that is just a facade. Or is it? Titus Andronicus is playing now through February 10th. For tickets, call 773-753-4472 or visit courttheater.org.
Writers Theater presents The Turn of the Screw by Jeffrey Hatcher from the story by Henry James. Time Out Chicago calls it surprisingly and creepily suggestive. An unsuspecting governess is hired to look after two seemingly innocent children who soon reveal terrifying secrets. The Sun-Times raves, eerie as ever, Screw will mesmerize you. For tickets to The Turn of the Screw, go to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Hephaestus, a Greek mythology circus tale, returns to Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks. The Wall Street Journal calls it explosive, dazzling, and dangerous. For tickets to Hephaestus, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And the all-male comedic ballet company, Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo, or the Trocs, as they are affectionately called, appear one night only, Harris Theater in Millennium Park on January 17th. This hilarious troupe performs a fabulous evening of high art and satire. Get your tickets right now, folks, because it's here, 312-334-7777, or go to harristheaterchicago.org today.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome.
under the Big Ten.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt and you're still a crowd pleaser. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny, too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
Openly gay Army medic Sergeant Darren Manzella, who has previously discussed his sexual orientation in December on 60 Minutes, spoke with reporters about his experience serving under the military's anti-gay, don't ask, don't tell policy at the National Press Club in Washington. So far, Manzella has been able to serve without retribution. His attorneys say, however, that he can still be investigated for violating the military's policy.
Lambda Legal, which won the 2006 New Jersey Supreme Court ruling that said same-sex couples must have the same rights as married couples, is calling on New Jersey state's legislature to amend its civil union laws to provide full marriage equality. Civil unions label same-sex couples as different and inferior, and no amount of tinkering with the rules and benefits can erase the stain of inequality, said Lambda Legal Executive Director Kevin Cathcart.
A British 14-year-old girl hung herself after school because of anti-gay bullying. It is unknown whether or not Belinda Allen identified as lesbian, but she was repeatedly called names such as dyke at her high school. An 11-year-old boy from the same school hung himself last year.
The focus of Philadelphia's Equality Forum 2008 will be gays and lesbians in the Muslim world. International journalist Michael Longo, Iranian queer organization founder Arsham Parsi, and Irshad Maji will be present for various events. Equality Forum 2008 will be held April 28th to May 4th. See equalityforum.com for more information.
The Human Rights Campaign released the 2008 Best Places to Work for GLBT Equality. This year, 195 major U.S. companies, an unprecedented number, made the list for scoring 100% on HRC's Foundation Corporate Equality Index. Last year, 138 made the cut. You can see the complete list at hrc.org/places-to-work.
A new unauthorized biography of actor Tom Cruise attempts to put gay rumors to rest by suggesting the star has always been a womanizer and slightly homophobic. How ironic, then, that Cruise's lawyers say the new book, Tom Cruise, An Unauthorized Biography, is full of lies.
Paris Hilton was spotted schmoozing with Kate Moyning and Daniela C. of The L Word at the season 5 premiere of The L Word in Los Angeles. Moyning and Hilton were also spotted holding hands at a venue after they left the party.
Oh, Paris ain't gay. Lesbian talk show host Ellen DeGeneres took home two People's Choice Awards. DeGeneres has taken home the Favorite Talk Show Host and Favorite Funny Female Star categories every year since 2005.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Because a singer goes on singing like a song is her best friend.
Hi, this is Linda Etter, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Here's the rainbow.
Darling, dear heart, angel mine, are we having some kind of communication problem? Is there something in the way that I speak that is unclear in any way? Do you hate me? Is that it? The way I suppose all gay men hate women unless they're in a black and white movie and suffering majestically? I was on the phone this afternoon speaking with he meaning him, and I said, oh, have you seen much of Mitchell? He meaning him responds with a bright and cheery and, let's say it, swishy, oh yes, my lover. They hate that word. Is there another word in the English language, please? My lover and I had drinks with Mitchie, and his sweet young friend, Alex. Friend. I could sense the quotation marks transcontinentally. Friend.
Oh, Diane, listen to me.
You listen to me. We are investing money into a property that will fill the common woman with lust and fill the common man with envy. My problem is, if you start walking around with your friend over there, you will not inspire lust in common women, and every common man will feel superior to you.
So what if I have a friend? Maybe I'll be a famous actor.
Are you British? Are you knighted? If not, shut up.
God damn it, Diane, I'm happy and content when I'm with this guy. I'm so fucking horrible.
If a perceived straight actor portrays a gay role in a feature film, it's noble. It's a stretch. It's the pretty lady putting on the fake nose and winning an Oscar. If an actor with a friend portrays a gay role, it's not acting, it's bragging.
Oh, so this picture won't get made.
About homos? Not at the studio, not for the money they just spent. They might send it down to their art house division.
And that's so bad.
I will not stand in the way of this picture being made, but that said, oh, Massa, please don't send me down to boutique division. I starve there.
I can't take all this. I'm just trying to carve out a little life here for myself. I need to go.
Mitch, don't hang up on me.
I'm sorry. Don't pick on me. I'm fighting for my life.
And who isn't Angel Mine? Let me tell you a story.
Diane?
No, don't hang up on me. When I was first an agent, a junior agent, I packaged my first film, all of it, source material, writer, actor, cinematographer, producers, everything. And I had a meeting with this director. As a last-minute precaution, I brought along a lawyer, a nobody flunky from legal, to help us through the finer points. And all through this meeting with said director never looked at me. Never spoke to me, never acknowledged my existence. I was, by his estimation, a bimbo, a piece of ass. And he spoke only to the lawyer. I did not exist. Yesterday, in this office, said director is here in this office to get the job of our movie. And I exist. And he looks me in the eye, and I am not a piece of ass, and he begs me for the job to direct this film. Not in so many words, but the eyes, they're begging. And he says to me, come on, Diane, we have history. History. He is asking me to believe in the reinvention of our past. History. This is where we are in our lives. Now, there were 8,000 times in that story I just told when I could have shouted out, hello, I am a person and you are ignoring me, but I didn't. Even at the end when I was on top. And that's how one wins. By shutting up. You can win. And all you have to do is shut up. Don't say anything.
Then I won't say anything.
Thank you.
Do the picture the big way, the way you want.
Thank you, my love. Thank you.
I don't have a friend, and it's nobody's business.
And there is a new comedy in town, The Little Dog Laughed, making its Chicago premiere, and with it comes all the buzz of Broadway and its Tony Award win. The play was written by Douglas Carter Bean, who also wrote the book for Xanadu the Musical that's currently on Broadway, and the film Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And who better to bring Chicago this transparent and hilarious look at celebrity than the Chicago talents of Lee Coco and Mary Beth Fisher and About Face Theater. Hey, Mary Beth and Lee, Happy New Year.
Hi, Hubie, thanks.
Happy New Year.
Hey, this is quite an anticipated play. I mean, it was all the buzz, and I think for the gay community, really huge to have such a show that is exploring gay issues and kind of a comedic and less sad and you know, dire way, fatalistic way, you know, being revered on Broadway. So I think it's amazing that About Face is bringing this to Chicago. Lee, talk a little bit about who is Mitchell. We heard a little bit about the scene. Obviously, there's a struggle with him. So who is he?
He is a movie star on the rise. It doesn't get specific with exactly how far he's come. We know that he's won an award, something along the lines of the Golden Globe or
a New York Film Critics
right.
Award.
And
he's a golden boy.
Yeah, he's
a new
golden boy.
On the rise golden boy.
And as Diane says in the beginning of the play, he has a slight recurring case of homosexuality.
Okay.
And so one of the conflicts in the play is whether or not Mitchell is going to live openly as a gay man or not. And it explores the, you know, the tension between our private lives and our real life. Mitchell is, he is gay, and he has struggled with it for a long time. And his struggle is really he's trying to determine what he's going to identify himself as, you know, and he's trying to imagine himself as a gay man, and anytime that scenario comes close to coming to fruition, disaster ensues. You know? His career starts to crumble, his relationship with his agent starts to crumble.
Now, has this ever been something that you've explored in the rehearsal process of, are you modeling it on anyone in particular, or is it a cross-section? I mean, obviously, the allusions to Tom Cruise, though he is a megawatt star,
right?
You know, which might be different. And we're in the wake, too, of this past year of this show now coming to Chicago. It's a little precursor when it was happening in New York to T.R. Knight, Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, finally, some men who are not knighted and not British, as you say, in the beginning of that scene. You know, who are young and kind of virile, and we see them as sexual men, as opposed to, not that we don't see Ian McKellen as a sexual man, but, you know, in a little less so. So has all that kind of been in the conversation in the room? Or for you, have you thought about that?
You should come. These are great points to bring up. You know, I think what we focus on, we've spent a little bit of time at the beginning of rehearsals talking about, you know, talking about specific actors, but ultimately I think the play isn't served by anything like that. You know, Mitchell is a very distinct character, and the way I'm looking at it is, the more faithful I can be to what Douglas Carter Beane has written, then I don't have to concern myself with any of that other stuff.
So it's like the real struggle of this character he's written, as opposed to trying to implement somebody else's struggle in a fictitious way.
Right, and it is, you know, something that Mary Beth brought up a little while ago. We were trying to figure out if we could come up with one big movie star who is openly gay, you know, and it is kind of hard-pressed to think of one, you know, other than somebody who is British and knighted.
And knighted. Yeah, no, it's true, it's true. Now, the primary relationship, you would think, and we'll talk about some of the other characters in the play, but the primary relationship is this relationship of agent and actor, agent and celebrity, and the struggle, I think, just from what I know about the play, of, you know, keeping that, you know, man behind the curtain, that illusion alive that we all buy into as lay people of Hollywood and celebrity and all of that. And Diane is, I mean, that is her quest, is
well,
it
Diane
not?
Well, Diane wants him to be Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That is her goal.
Yeah, what motivates her?
There's no doubt about it.
We hear a little bit in this monologue.
Well, you know, Diane is also gay. She's, three people in this play are gay. Her sexuality is not an issue in the play. She is all about power. She wants power. She wants to be on top. And
she's the ultimate power lesbian.
Yeah.
The L word is her scene.
You know, she's made peace in her own way with, as you can hear in that long speech in that scene, she's made her peace with what it takes for a gay woman to play the game in a very male-dominated profession, particularly the movie industry of Hollywood is supremely male-dominated.
Very male.
And she's made her peace with that. She's decided that she's A-okay keeping her mouth shut, and she doesn't care. If that's the way she's going to make her money and get into a position of power, that's what she wants. Her ultimate goal in this play is to go to skyrocket, basically, with his success, from agent to producing partner on a major motion picture. She wants to be the new, what's her name? Is it Sherry Lansing?
Yeah, Sherry Lansing.
That's what she wants to be.
Wow. You know, and it's interesting. We did an interview not too long ago with Jamie Babbitt, who's an openly lesbian director and writer. She's directed for a lot of episodes, The Gilmore Girls, and she's directed for Nip Tuck, and Ryan Murphy's really given her a lot of success, and she's also a writer. And, you know, she said exactly that. Like, you cannot believe how much of a boys' club out here. And if you're a lesbian that doesn't play golf, you're really in trouble, which was quite funny.
Well, I do play golf in real life.
Well, there you go. There you go. You can bring that. Now, I'm just curious. I mean, being an actress, are you a little bit worried that any of your, I don't know if you've only had one agent in your entire life, but that you may offend the person that you give your cut to every now and again?
Not at all.
Are you able to pull from experiences in this kind of crazy profession of constantly trying to get a job, constantly trying to move ahead?
Oh, I have a specific image in mind for every single person I talk about in this play. We have a writer who we talk about quite a lot in this play. There's this director that I talk about who, you know, gave me a really terrible experience early in my career, and believe me, I have a very strong image of all of those people. As far as the agents go, they all love this show.
Yeah.
And they, you know, agents, every agent I talk to can't wait to come and see it. I think they live vicariously through Diane, because really, I don't know how
she wins.
Yes.
And
she does win.
She says the things that probably many of them don't even have. I mean,
that's correct.
The guts to say. I mean, and that's kind of the joy of, like, getting this role, I think, is that I think you will see a lot of people living vicariously. You don't have to be an agent, just like that kind of...
Oh, sure. I live vicariously through Diane. I get to do it. It's such a stress reliever every day.
So talk to me a little bit about who some of the other characters are, Lee. I mean, the makeup, it's a tight-knit ensemble for this comedy.
It is, yeah. The other two characters are Mitchell's paramour, Alex, and he is a... He's a rent boy. He's a male prostitute. That's how he makes his living.
We have other words for that, but rent boy's nice. If you, you can say whatever the fuck you want on the podcast, but that's okay. I'll take rent boy. Just shows you how sweet and charming Lee Coco is. Come see him in the play. He's very cute. All right.
And our rent boy is played by...
Rent boy is played by Levi Holloway. Mm-hmm. And then there is the character of Ellen, who is Alex's girlfriend slash ex-girlfriend in the play.
Plot thickens.
And that is played by Heather Preet. She is the only straight person in the play, although she is a little, her character is a little...
slightly bent.
Slightly bent. a little off center, left of center.
It sounds like she'd have to be with this gaggle of these characters. So talk to me a little bit about Douglas Carter Beane and working with his material. As I said before, you know, Douglas Carter Beane won a GLAAD Media Award for Little Dog, which is quite an accomplishment. And many have talked about the language in the play. Just that, you know, he's taken these characters that are fairly shallow characters and made them so fascinating and three-dimensional and interesting and given them this heightened language that we almost don't see anymore from American playwrights. And also given them these monologues of which the scene you read, you know, kind of really shows us that dimension. And what is that like to play? Because it sounds like all these characters have these kind of monologuing moments where they get to become transparent.
Well, honestly, I live in terror of the direct address mode of this play. I have a lot of direct address to the audience, which I haven't experienced yet with a real live audience. I'm hoping that after my first preview, when I flip out and stumble, when I look into the whites of people's eyes, that I'll get over it and I'll be okay. But
I think they'll feed you, honestly.
Well, I hope so.
I think
it's
that's
scary.
The hope, is that that's the connection,
I know.
Right?
You hope you don't look out and see somebody who's looking at you with horror or dismay.
You will, but just look right past them. That always happens.
So he writes in a very challenging way, but one of the things that I really love about his language, it's really specific to Douglas Carter Beane. He writes in a real colloquial way that's very hip and mm-hmm. very urban, mm-hmm. and he very specifically writes in stumbles and the way people catch in their language with us and wells and thens and how they're finding their way through their thoughts through that kind of stumbly language, but it's very realistic. It's also extremely biting, and he writes very incisive commentary about these particular situations in the gay and lesbian world, about how gays and lesbians struggle for power and identity and self-assurance and self-esteem. He has a lot of very biting things to say, and he just lets people fly out and say them, which is really refreshing. It's hard to do. I mean, most of us, I think, have a filter, a social filter,
right.
But these characters really don't.
Right.
And
they're saying them amongst. I mean, it's kind of like they can sit. They're all talking through that. They can speak in their baddest form too. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like that. There's nobody there to kind of be a truant to any of these conversations. So the unorthodox conversations you don't want to hear anybody else to hear.
Right.
You know. So it all gets to fly. And what I also like, even in just what we hear. Obviously, we hear the reference to Nicole Kidman or Ian McKellen. I mean, it does give it a contemporary, as you said, colloquialism. But that, you know, it kind of calls back some of the gay writers of, like, Noel Coward, who probably did it with a lot of aplomb, shall I say. But then also, like, Oscar Wilde, who was really writing biting satire in heightened language about the time and society and the structures and, the how fake certain aspects of this whole class structure
was. In a way, it's almost closer to Joe Orton, who, was so out there with... His commentary on society.
I kind of sometimes think of it as he's the love child of Tennessee Williams and David Mamet sometimes.
Yeah. Interesting.
In the sense that he is so hyper-articulate, and yet you go from monologues in which the characters are articulating in a very complex way what's going on inside their minds, and then in the next beat it's all stutters and half lines and and missed opportunities and miscommunications, misdirections. And the tension between those going between those two modes of communicating, it allows, there's a lot of stuff that can come off the page. You know, there's a lot of relationship that happens in between the lines for us, and I think that's something that's really nice about this play. Something that I really love about the play is that it's even as specific as his satire can be, it's still, there's a lot open to interpretation. You know, this play could be done 1,000 different ways, you know.
Right.
It's just there's a lot of joy for us to really get exactly the play that we want to, you know, produce.
And what's really fun about it too is that given all of the direct address, the audience is a really active participant in this play.
Oh, that's amazing.
A fifth character.
Well, that's what I see. Like, it's almost a voyeuristic quality that they're kind of then turned
and
talked to.
I mean, when you have people speaking to you directly as an audience, you are completely involved in the play.
Yeah.
The people on stage need you.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that we're talking to you.
Right.
We need your support. We need your...
And is that does the comedy come out of kind of that audacity of everything that they're saying, we can't believe they're saying, and also...
And yet you know that you want to say it and
you
think it all the time.
I mean, exactly.
It's like reality television almost. It's like a finely narrated, you know, reality television episode.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's like the curtain's been lifted, and this is what we think. I mean, I know we referenced Tom Cruise or somebody, but we know there's many, 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 many other of gay and lesbian actors in Hollywood because the whole town's, you know... there's a lot of gays in Hollywood. And we want to know what goes on behind those walls. Like, what are those conversations that just to keep all the children in line and doing what they need to do to make money and to tell America, you know, who they are as opposed to showing America who they are, you know? It's so fascinating. I think people should just get out and see it. I mean, that's a thing. Go out. It's the January, February months in Chicago, and it's cold. So, folks, this is when you want to, go out and see a show in Chicago. Go in, go laugh, have a great time. The Little Dog Laughed is playing now. It's playing at the Hoover Leppin Theater at the Center on Halsted, which is 3656 North Halsted Street. Are you enjoying being in the new center? I mean, that's going to be fantastic for everybody. It's the first time About Face has been in the center.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and it's right there in the neighborhood. So you can go have a drink, go see the show, go back to Sidetrack afterward. It's all fun. So see The Little Dog Laughed at the Center on Halsted, 3656 North Halsted Street. You know About Face brings quality gay and lesbian plays to Chicago. So to get your tickets, call 866-811-4111. Or it's easier, folks. You're already listening to this. So just log on to aboutfacetheater.com. Lee and Mary Beth, break legs, and we'll see you in the theater.
Great. Thank you.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.